I'm Chris Boyd. Up next on Think, a portrait of the religious leader whose embrace of Donald Trump may have convinced other evangelical Christians to do the same. Robert Jeffress is pastor of First Baptist Dallas, but as journalist Michael Mooney will tell us, his influence goes far beyond the roles of his 13,000-member church. He's a frequent guest on Fox News and Fox Business and hosts his own daily TV and radio shows. Jeffress finds biblical justification for tight border controls and specifically for the construction of a wall. He adamantly opposes abortion and he's on very friendly terms with the president. We'll talk about that relationship and how Jeffress has built and wielded that power. Our conversation starts after a short break.
Funding for the Think podcast comes from TCU, where researchers strive to develop sustainable solutions to protect the world's fresh water supply. You can learn more at endeavors.tcu.edu.
Back in 2016, Donald Trump might have been a tough sell to evangelical voters. In contrast to primary opponents like Mike Huckabee, Ted Cruz, and Ben Carson, Trump said very little about the importance of religion in his life, and he had a history of saying quite a lot about his appetites for sex and fame and money. But if Christians had doubts about Trump, they could look to First Baptist Dallas pastor Robert Jeffress, cultivating a national profile as a spiritual leader and frequent Fox News commentator. If Jeffress could overlook Trump's sins enough to join him on the campaign trail, some other Christians realized they could do the same. The pastor's influence with Christian voters might indeed have helped Mr. Trump win the White House. So how much influence does a friend like Robert Jeffress have on the Trump presidency? From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Journalist Michael J. Mooney writes for publications including ESPN the Magazine, Rolling Stone, and GQ. He's known Pastor Jeffress for the better part of a decade when he wrote an article about Jeffress for D Magazine. And the two discovered that despite very different views on a great many things, they were fond of each other. But in the years since Jeffress has entered President Trump's near orbit, Mooney has struggled to understand how this particular politician was able to gain Jeffress's endorsement, given a field crowded with more traditionally Christian and traditionally Republican office seekers. Mooney has a revealing new profile of Pastor Robert Jeffress titled Trump's Apostle in the August issue of Texas Monthly. Michael, welcome back to Think.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I love the show.
Thank you. So Dr. Jeffress is first and foremost senior pastor of First Baptist Dallas. I honestly had no idea the church was as big as it is. So tell us a little bit about the services there.
The services are massive. He does two services every Sunday morning. Each of them have about 1,600 people in the main sanctuary, a couple hundred more in a kind of contemporary sanctuary down the hall, and then tens of thousands of people watching on television or listening to it on radio. He has a very a large contingent who listen to him in various forms, and people are hearing his message literally all around the globe.
I just want to listen to a little bit of Pastor Jeffress on Easter Sunday giving a sermon just to get a sense of how he sounds when he's talking to his congregation.
Yeah.
He gets a call from Visa. Where is our money? We want our money, and we're going to come and get you or Deanna if you don't give us our money now. And Tyler said, oh, well, there must be a mix-up. My pastor, Dr. Jeffress, sent in a check to cover my debt. I said, well, let us check here. They fiddle around on the computer. They come back on the line and said, oh, well, we did get a check from Dr. Jeffress for $20,000. Tyler is so relieved. They said, but we used that check against his debt of $100,000 he has with us. Send us the $20,000. Now listen to me. To pay off somebody else's debt, you have to be debt-free. To pay off somebody else's sin, you have to be sin-free. And only Jesus Christ was sin-free. And that's why he said, it is finished, paid in full.
He's a very compelling person to listen to.
Yeah, he's incredible on stage. His entire life, he's been a performer. So starting when he was in middle school or elementary school, he would play the accordion on television on the Mr. Peppermint Show. He has very much enjoyed being in front of an audience his entire life.
Had a dream of being, like, working in TV long before he ever thought about ministry.
Yeah, his first dream job was to be an executive producer or producer on a television show, potentially a news show, but he just really enjoyed television as a medium. He enjoys performances of all kinds. He likes going to Broadway. When he was a kid, he would put together musical shows at his school and perform solo crooning. He very, very much enjoys being on stage, and he is in his element on stage.
So what are his own broadcasts like, the ones he does for Christian radio and TV?
So for the people who have only heard of him or seen him through Fox News, it's a very different type of discussion when he is on stage or when he is pasteurizing, essentially. He talks about Jesus. He talks about pop culture, and he makes references to all sorts of literature and movies, and puts it together in a message that is, in the end, always the same. It's always about Jesus. It's always about how there's only one way to get to heaven, and that's through Jesus Christ. And it's actually really interesting to see the different ways that he gets to that end result, because he can start in a million different places and still end up there.
Well, it's interesting. I'm not sure he thinks a lot of Democrats are going to get to heaven, and here he is on Fox and Friends.
Walls are immoral, then God is immoral. There's nothing immoral about a wall, but what is immoral is for Democrats, for political reasons, to block this president from fulfilling his God-given responsibility to keep our country safe. And it's certainly immoral for Democrats to support sanctuary cities, which are nothing but havens of lawlessness and are directly responsible for the death of police officer Ron Singh and many others. And I think instead of vilifying and demonizing President Trump, we ought to thank God every day we have a president like Donald Trump who takes his oath of office seriously and is willing to do whatever it takes.
What are the biblical justifications that Jeffress finds for a border wall?
He's used a lot of different biblical justifications at this point. He talks often about the story of Daniel. He talks about the Old Testament story of Nehemiah, who rebuilt the wall in Jerusalem, though when he tells the story, he doesn't get into the idea that that was a wall for security against warring factions and that refugees were actually allowed into the wall. But at this point, I think I've counted six or seven different references he's made to defend the wall alone. And he uses biblical references to defend a lot of different Trump policies or, in some cases, Trump behavior. But the wall, I think it's six or seven different biblical references for that alone.
All right. So how did those two get to be friends? They don't necessarily hang out in the same circles. He was on TV. Jeffress was on TV in 2015.
That's right. So this was one of the most interesting questions I had, is how does this pastor in Dallas become friends and close with this businessman and game show host from New York, and to the point where they're going on the campaign trail together. And it turned out to be that they bonded over television, really, in a lot of ways. Robert Jeffress was on Fox News, and early on, I'm going to say late summer 2015, not long after Donald Trump announced his run for presidency, Robert Jeffress decided that this was somebody who could win. This is somebody who could beat Hillary Clinton. And he essentially went all in for him on Fox News, defending him publicly even before they knew each other. And Donald Trump saw that and really enjoyed that and reached out and thanked him publicly on Twitter and reached out privately. And they met. And very soon, Robert Jeffress was praying at Trump events in Dallas. And then by early 2016, before the primaries, they were going to Iowa together. And Robert Jeffress was talking to the crowds before Donald Trump went on stage.
So one thing that you've struggled with is understanding the aspects of President Trump's persona, maybe moral fiber that that Reverend Jeffress tends to overlook, the sexual stuff, for instance.
There are a lot of things in the 3 or 4 years now that that this has been happening. There are a lot of things that Robert Jeffress has either defended or explained that those things didn't bother him. So when it came out that Donald Trump had had sex with a porn star and then paid to cover it up, Robert Jeffress said, you know, I don't condone that behavior. I think his quote was, we still believe in the commandment, thou shalt not sleep with a porn star, which is a very Robert Jeffress way of putting that.
Did he literally say, thou shalt not sleep with a porn star?
I believe he did say that, yes. But he said, you know, look, we knew we weren't electing an altar boy when we elected Donald Trump. He has a way of explaining away or equivocating or defending Donald Trump at every turn, no matter what it is. It's actually it's pretty incredible to watch the kind of intellectual acrobatics that he kind of goes through as he figures out a way. He's incredibly clever as he figures out the best way to defend the president, whatever the news is that week.
So I think a lot of spiritual leaders who are trying to guide their congregations to good behavior and morality will say, I recognize that no one who walks through the doors of this mosque, this church, this synagogue is going to fulfill all the requirements of our faith. Is it somehow different? Is he doing something different for Donald Trump than he would do for any one of his congregants?
That's a good question. It's hard to say. I think in some ways, no. I think he truly is a friend of Donald Trump's. I think he believes that they would be friends even if Donald Trump did not win the presidency. And I think his dedication to his friends and his loyalty to the people that he is close to, this is Robert Jeffress, extends it to not criticizing people in public. I think he's told me that over and over again, that people he considers friends, he really doesn't want to criticize them in public. And loyalty happens to be the one of the top things that Donald Trump looks for in allies. And so I think that the two men have actually grown relatively close. Robert Jeffress told me that they're not bosom buddies, that's his term, but that he used the term love at one point. He really does like Donald Trump genuinely as a person. And he told me that, you know, no matter what happens, he's going to continue to support his friend.
Is that do you think Jeffress and you have a similar relationship where you disagree on things, but you consider one another friends?
Yeah, I do. I have a very strange friendship with this Baptist preacher, and we've for 8 years known each other, and we have lunch every couple of months, and we talk about politics, and we talk about our families, and we talk about what's going on in the news, and occasionally we talk about religious topics, and we truly get along. I think we enjoy each other's company. And he has a strange, unusual, surprising relationship with the man who is now president of the United States, even though that person also does not have an enormous amount in common with Robert Jeffress, certainly not in terms of background or traditional beliefs.
Does Dr. Jeffress consider you saved?
No. He tells me he prays for me all the time. He prays for my wife. He would very much love to convert me, I think. He would love to make me a Christian. He's told me this. He knows that I care a lot about writing, and I love literature, and I love books. And he often reminds me of great writers throughout history who have converted to Christianity, sometimes late in life. He loves C.S. Lewis and has told me that he would love to – I've joked with him that I know he would love to brag that he converted his own C.S. Lewis at some point. So he knows that I am not a Christian in his sense of the word in any way. He knows I'm not a Baptist. He knows that we don't really share the same view of the world in almost any way, actually. Although the more we talk, we find that, like most Americans, we actually share an enormous amount in common. We have a lot of views and a lot of the same values. And that the more we talk about politics, that is the kind of thing that divides us more than anything.
My guest is journalist Michael J. Mooney. His profile of Pastor Robert Jeffress, titled Trump's Apostle, appears in the August issue of Texas Monthly. This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is journalist Michael J. Mooney, talking about his profile of First Baptist Dallas Pastor Robert Jeffress. It's called Trump's Apostle. It's in the August issue of Texas Monthly. We were curious about what Pastor Jeffress thought about the profile, and so we called him. He spoke this morning to producer Paige Phelps.
Michael is always great to fairly and to accurately represent my point of view, even though he obviously doesn't agree with my point of view on everything. Now, I don't think Michael had anything to do with selecting the final title for the article, Trump's Apostle. Obviously, that is hyperbolic. My purpose in life is not to share the good news of Donald Trump, but to share the good news of Jesus Christ. But the article itself was great, I thought. You know, Michael makes the point that he attended services on and off for like 5 months at our church and never heard me mention politics from the pulpit. And I think that helps dispel a false assumption people have about First Baptist Dallas. Every Sunday is not a Make America Great Again rally. In fact, I rarely even talk about any of that from the pulpit. But this represents my own personal views.
What do you make of the fact that the services themselves don't come across as overtly political, and yet when he is in secular media environments, Jeffress seems very eager to talk about politics?
He has a different way of looking at who he's speaking to. He knows who he's talking to anytime he is in front of a microphone, in front of a crowd. And he knows he's consistent in terms of his beliefs, but he knows the things he would like to say to various audiences. To a political audience watching Fox News, he is going to talk about how the Democrats are the party of immorality, or how a congresswoman from New York is misinterpreting a biblical reference. When he is at the pulpit, he has a kind of traditional Southern Baptist message. He does it like a kind of fire and brimstone TED talk, where he wants to give people useful life lessons, but ultimately it's going to end up in that same end point where the sermon is going to end with him calling people who have not given their lives to Jesus down to the altar and have them pledge themselves to Jesus.
So would you say that politics and political appearances are a recruiting tool for him, for people into the faith, or the other way around?
I think his involvement in politics has two parts of it. Some part, he really does believe that the laws that are getting passed by the conservative politicians are better for society, but he also uses politics as part of his ministry. He uses Fox News as part of his ministry. There are a lot of people who have never heard of him, have never listened to one of his sermons, but still know who he is because of his involvement on Fox News or his defenses of the president. And so he really does use that, at least in his mind, to bring people to church, to get people into the faith in ways that they might not otherwise. Some churches use, really nice coffee. Some churches use rock music. His ministry really does involve talking about politics.
So we've talked thus far about some of his positions. He's come across as a really personally amiable person, someone who's easy to like in a one-on-one encounter. He has said and done some things that are really offensive and hurtful to people. He sort of made a big splash on the national media scene when he took on the existence of books written for kids who might have same-sex parents.
Yeah, this was his first endeavor into controversy, really. He was a pastor. This is 1998 in Wichita Falls. And there were two books in the local library that somebody brought to him. And it was Heather Has Two Mommies and My Two Dads, I think.
Daddy's Roommate.
That's right. And he was kind of appalled that these books were available for children to read in the public library. And he decided to make a stand. The way he describes it is he decided to make a stand right there and was not going to return the books. And that was his stand. And he did not realize exactly how big it was going to get. But it became a national story very quickly. He got a lot of attention nationally. Newspapers from all over the country started writing about him. Early days of cable news, of Fox News, cable news, and conservative outlets picked up the story very quickly. And a lot of people in Wichita Falls did not like the story, and ultimately became a big lawsuit and involved the ACLU, and the judicial system decided that the books actually did need to be in the library, and that the city could not ban them. But by the end of that, his church had received the donations in the church had gone up, and the church was building a new building, and I think that they did not have any regrets ultimately.
So he's also said things that have been controversial or hurtful to Muslims and Jews and Catholics and Mormons.
Oprah Winfrey,
gays and lesbians. Would he tell you that he picks these targets deliberately in order to court attention, or that he feels very strongly that it's critical that he speak out about these things that he considers to be evil or bad influences in our society?
I think it's both. I think he truly believes that these are bad influences, and I think he truly believes that society is in a downward spiral morally. But he also understands that if he courts controversy, he generally gets more attention and has the opportunity to bring more people into the faith. I think he truly believes that whatever allows him to get, and within reason, I think, but whatever allows him to get more attention and to get a larger platform also allows him to reach more people and create more Christians.
So I have to tell you, I have not been to a service at First Baptist Dallas nor watched a broadcast of one, but I was surprised when you said you looked around the pews and saw lots of people of color, people who appeared to be immigrants. Did that surprise you?
It did, actually, yeah. You know, it's a diverse congregation. It is still largely white and disproportionately older. It is still a Southern Baptist church in Texas. But there are a lot of young couples. There are a lot of people of color. There are a lot of immigrants, and there are immigrants from all over the world. There's immigrants from Latin America, from East Asia, from Africa, and they all interact. It's kind of a large community that it does surprise a lot of people that it's probably as diverse as any megachurch I've been to.
What do they say about the things that Jeffress says? Are they sort of making the kinds of excuses for him that you feel like maybe he's making for President Trump?
I think everybody there really, not everybody, but I think almost everybody there really loves Jeffress. They're really proud of their pastor. They agree with him nearly 100%. A lot of them, I think, feel like he is putting into words arguments that they sides of arguments that they've already felt. He is helping explain things that they've had a hard time putting into words. And they love him for that. They love when he's on Fox News. And it's so fascinating to see, you know, the church on their Twitter feed will put his Fox News appearances right next to his sermons, even though he's saying totally different things in each of those. There is some kind of commingling of patriotism and religiosity.
What's his beef with Mitt Romney?
Oh, his Robert Jeffress and Mitt Romney is kind of one of the untold political beefs of modern times. It's so entertaining to me. Since 2007, Robert Jeffress has very publicly criticized Mormonism. He's talked about Mormonism being a cult. I think he said something, it's straight from the pit of hell, something along those lines. When in 2011, it looked like Mitt Romney was definitely going to be, or very likely going to be, the Republican nominee in 2012. Robert Jeffress was in front of cameras telling people that Mormonism is wrong. And Mitt Romney has very publicly called him a bigot. And so they've gone back and forth, sometimes on Twitter, sometimes in front of microphones. I don't know if they've ever met. I assume they haven't. Even in 2012, Robert Jeffress told me he was going to vote for Mitt Romney. He was going to hold his nose and vote for Mitt Romney.
So he wouldn't vote probably for a Democrat under any circumstances?
He says that he's not a Republican. He says that he's not a Republican or a Democrat. It's just that Republican and he truly believes that both parties are doomed in a lot of ways. He just believes very strongly in laws that he is very strongly pro-life, very strongly anti-abortion. And so he believes that there are just no Democrats in America anymore who really share that view.
So you explained that his kind of spiritual mentor, W.A. Criswell, was not as avidly pro-life. It wasn't as important an issue to him as it seems to be to Jeffress. What's that about?
So W.A. Criswell was his mentor. Robert Jeffress grew up in First Baptist Dallas and was baptized there and preached his first sermon there and was married there. And when he was a teenager and felt compelled to go into pastoring, Criswell pulled him aside and said, you know, I want you to know every inch of this church because one day it's going to be yours. So he feels like this, you know, this is a fundamentally important character in his life. And until very, very late into his life, Criswell would say things like life begins at birth. So I asked, and he had all sorts of other incredibly controversial views. Criswell was a very, very strong segregationalist until the late 60s. But I asked Jeffress why he thinks that abortion was not such an important topic at the time. And he really chalks it up to science. He really believes that we just didn't understand that these were people inside of a womb. And he believes that Criswell didn't understand that these were human beings inside there and that this is murder. And so he believes that it was just a lack of science.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Has Jeffress changed his mind publicly on anything?
No, he has. I've never heard him change his mind on something publicly. I have never really even heard him express doubt about something publicly. And I've talked to a lot of people in his life, and nobody can remember a time where they've seen him doubt himself. He is the most certain man I've ever met. He has told me that there was a time in college where he had a liberal theology professor who explained that the Bible wasn't literally true and that some of it was metaphorical. And so for a couple of weeks, he was praying less and believed less in the inerrancy of the Bible because he believes the Bible is literally true and 100% correct. And so he told me that it was going to a Billy Graham revival that changed his mind, and he had Billy Graham sign his Bible, and he, from that point on, never had another doubt.
That must feel really good.
It's got to be a relief. I am riddled with doubt. I rewrote the story. I can't even tell you how many times because of doubt.
Did you worry that your personal affection for him would get in the way of telling a story as straightforwardly as you could?
I did. I was at least concerned. I wanted to be as honest as possible. And so I felt like it might have been dishonest to not explain that I've had this kind of ongoing friendship with him for a number of years now. And then I realized that it's also part of the story. You know, my friendship with him is in some ways a parallel to his very strange friendship with the president. It's a surreal statement to make. It's just strange.
Do you find yourself like explaining away things when people tell you that they really disapprove of Pastor Jeffress's positions?
Yeah. Even when I'm not defending his positions, you know, I might be at a social gathering and especially people I'm friends with tend to be more liberal. And a lot of liberals really tend to hate Robert Jeffress, or they really are disgusted by the things he says or his defenses of the president. And I find myself clarifying, well, technically he didn't say that. He said this, which actually is, and it sounds like I'm defending him when I'm really just trying to clarify. And part of that is because I know him personally and I know his beliefs and I know his stances. I know people are going to dislike him. I just would prefer they dislike him for the right reasons.
Do you think there's anything hypocritical about him?
I think he works really, really hard to be consistent. I think consistency is incredibly important to him, even in a time where a lot of people who are making political commentary or a lot of people in politics, consistency is just not important at all. I think it's incredibly important to him. I think that's a struggle, and it's a line that he has to walk, being a Christian and somebody with his own congregation and you know, tens of thousands of people who are relying on him for a moral message, and also supporting a president whose stances are not always easy to defend biblically or from a traditional conservative perspective.
All right, let's go to the phones. We have Gabriel on the line in Dallas. Hi, Gabriel.
Hey, hi, Chris. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to let you guys know I am one of those few Christians that doesn't agree with Dr. Jeffries. Whatever his politics is, it's okay. What I disagree with him is his misrepresenting of what the Bible is and also what the message of Christ is.
Well, thank you so much for your call. We're not going to get into debating on this show what the message of the Bible or Jesus is, because it's only an hour long and we've only got 20 minutes left. But there are Christians who consider themselves very staunch Christians that we should make clear that don't agree with some of Pastor Jeffers' positions.
Right. Even Southern Baptists, there's an enormous amount of them who did not vote for Trump, do not condone his behavior or his policies, and disagree completely. This is a large percentage of our population. It's a huge number of people. So there are a lot of different beliefs within that community. And churches, even in Dallas, who are completely liberal compared to First Baptist Dallas, and generally their congregations are much more liberal politically than the members of First Baptist Dallas.
My guest is journalist Michael J. Mooney. He's got a profile of First Baptist Dallas pastor Robert Jeffress in the August issue of Texas Monthly titled Trump's Apostle. Think. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is journalist Michael J. Mooney, talking about his profile of First Baptist Dallas pastor Robert Jeffress. It's called Trump's Apostle. It's in the August issue of Texas Monthly. Michael, your point is well taken that Pastor Jeffress seems to just genuinely like the president on a personal basis. He often agrees with his political positions. There are some that you mentioned, healthcare and gun control, on which they've differed somewhat. But let's be clear. Dr. Jeffress is a smart guy, recognizes that having the president of the United States on speed dial has to have carry with it some influence that everybody would like to have.
Right. It's not purely transactional. There is a lot of genuine friendship there, I think. At least Robert Jeffress truly enjoys being around Donald Trump. But there are also a lot of things that evangelical leaders have wanted politically for a long time that they have now had the opportunity to have. So they've, having the ear of Donald Trump, been able to get leadership that they probably would not have gotten otherwise. I don't think that Donald Trump was largely concerned with things like the Johnson Amendment, how churches are taxed and whether all churches are 501c3s before meeting people like Robert Jeffress. I don't think that Donald Trump was tremendously concerned about where the Israeli embassy was before meeting these people. I don't think that he largely thought about what Robert Jeffress would probably term as religious discrimination, but the right of essentially of people to decline services for gay and trans people or not make cakes for gay weddings. I don't think that those issues were largely on Donald Trump's radar before meeting these people.
Can you walk us through if Jeffress believes that Jews may in fact be doomed to hell because they don't accept Jesus Christ as their savior, what the evangelical case is for the sort of very solicitous relationship with the state of Israel?
So we talked a lot about this. This was something I was really interested in why he cares so much about not just where the embassy is in Israel, but, you know, they take the church takes trips to Israel every year, sometimes twice a year. And it's fascinating because he truly believes in end times. He believes he's a dispensationalist. He believes that there's going to be an antichrist and that there's going to be a huge battle that and Jesus is going to return to earth. And a lot of those things are going to happen in Israel. And so he is very concerned about the state of Israel and certain things that have to happen to enable the return of Jesus. And so that leads to a fascination with a protection of and a kind of political alliance with Israel that might otherwise seem counterintuitive.
Can you explain the term dispensationalist for us?
Well, I'm probably not the best person to explain it, but the idea is that the Bible will there'll be eras that will unfold that will ultimately lead to a large confrontation with an antichrist and Christ, and this will be apocalypse and I believe it's 7 years of terror and horror on the planet. And again, I'm not a theologian, and so I'm probably least comfortable explaining that kind of thing. And there's I've got to be people just shaking their heads at the radio right now, listening to me. But it is essentially a belief in end times. It's essentially a belief that there's going to be a large reckoning, and that Jesus will return to earth, and that there'll be a large fiery final battle.
Does Pastor Jeffers make a lot of money as head of First Dallas Baptist?
So the church doesn't release the salaries of their employees. And it's really difficult to figure out exactly how much he makes. This is a question that's come up a couple of times, and I've asked him pretty directly, and he's told me that his salary is in line with other evangelical megachurch pastors. He lives in a large house in North Dallas. He is not particularly flashy with money. It's hard to know exactly how much he makes. He also writes books. He basically does a book a year. And he is paid as a contributor for Fox News. I've seen estimates on the internet of his income or net worth. It's really hard to verify.
Why do you think the producers over there are quick to call him when they want to comment on something?
I mean, he is wonderful on camera. He is always going to present well, and he's always going to have a thoughtful, imaginative defense of whatever happens to be in the news that week. He is an incredibly reliable source of new biblical explanations for policies or behavior, and he's going to be on time. He understands how just the medium works very well, and it's easy in terms of television news and cable news production to have him come in and do a 5 minutes of reliable defenses and kind of entertaining lambasting of Democrats, and he's going to call Mitt Romney a self-righteous snake, and he's going to make good television.
So we mentioned that there are a couple of places in which he diverges from sort of the mainstream Republican movement these days. Gun control is one of them, but there's an asterisk there. He doesn't necessarily think more laws would work, but he thinks gun control is important.
He is really torn on gun control.
Correct me if I got that wrong.
Yeah, no, so he really is. This is the kind of thing that we talked about a lot, both the recorder on and the recorder off. Every time there was a mass shooting, he would ask me, you know, what do I think? What do you think of this? What could possibly stop this? And I would ask him, you know, what do you think could possibly stop this? And he has a couple of standard answers where it's, you know, praying in school and putting the Ten Commandments in more places. But I do think he is really torn over whether people should have the ability to whether Americans have the right to walk around with tools that can slaughter dozens of people in a very short period of time. I know that, you know, they don't check for guns at the church. There is a lot of security, but there's also a lot of people carrying weapons in the pews. He doesn't know...
Like openly carrying weapons?
There are, I mean, not rifles generally. I don't think I saw a single rifle. But there are people who are concealed carrying handguns in the pews.
And healthcare is another place that he has different opinions.
Right. He doesn't have specific policy prescriptions for healthcare, but he definitely believes, he told me repeatedly, Republicans are wrong on healthcare, his words, and that you can't eliminate healthcare without having a substantial plan underneath it ready to go. And so he, you know, he's very vague about his criticisms. He's doesn't have any specific policies that he would like to enact. But he also understands that there's a general sentiment that healthcare is an issue in our country that people complain about both sides of the political aisle, and gun control is an issue in our that our country is really trying to reconcile.
Why are same-sex issues such a deal breaker for him, same-sex rights, when there are other, for example, if we talk about, you know, the president, he disapproves of the president sleeping with a porn star, but not enough to dismiss him as someone who is really going down the wrong path.
So he has preached about same-sex issues a lot, and he had a sermon in 2008 that was a two-part sermon called "Gay Is Not Okay." And he has said a lot of controversial things about gay people and is pretty opposed to giving gay people certain rights. But he's also pretty big on saying all sin is equal. You know, homosexuality is a sin in his mind, but it is not a bigger sin than any other sin. It's just one of the sins that people need to refrain from. So he understands that it's going to be controversial, and he understands that he's going to get a lot of attention when he talks about same-sex issues. But he also is clear when he says, you know, this is not the only issue. This is not the only sin. And he also says things like, you know, parents of gay children should not abandon them. They should know that their children always are always loved, and some slightly mitigating things. The only issue that he really feels like is, I mean, politically, I think he leans towards abortion being the most important issue. And he grew up in Dallas in the late 50s and 60s and early 70s. So he was a teenager when Roe versus Wade happened right down the block from his church.
That was Henry Wade, the Dallas County DA.
That's right. So abortion for him is, you know, I think probably the biggest issue, and everything can be boiled down to his opposition to abortion.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Did he tell you that there's anything that he's working on the president on that he's hoping to convince the president of?
So I asked him that, and I asked him, is there anything you've ever criticized the president about? Is there anything you'd really like from the president that he hasn't given you? And he told me if there were, he would not tell me, because that's what friends do.
Why do you think he wouldn't tell you?
He believes that his friendship with the president allows for private communication that he doesn't want shared with other friends or journalists or readers or radio listeners.
It is interesting. They have a really different, they seem to have a very different view on media. Pastor Jeffress is notably, he goes on Fox News, but he goes on NPR too. You know, he was willing to speak to you. President Trump doesn't seem to feel quite the same way about all media outlets.
Right. So Robert Jeffress's mother was a journalism teacher in Richardson. And a lot of her students, she was beloved in the school district, and a lot of her students went on to great newspapers across the country. And I've met a lot of them. And he does have a different view about the media. And he tells people when they ask him, you know, why do you talk to fake news? He says, you know, I really think that most reporters are doing the best they can. Most journalists are trying to be fair. And once in a rare while, he'll kind of do a vague slap at the media writ large. But he is actually, he does have a different view where he does take questions, and I think he's also interested in challenging questions. I think he enjoys the intellectual challenge of figuring out what he should say or the right answer when I say things like, you know, do you think Donald Trump may have been a test from God that you failed? I think he really enjoys thinking about questions like that.
What did he tell you?
Well, at first he said, you know, well, what do you mean? How could evangelicals have failed with Donald Trump? And I said, you know, well, there were a bunch of other choices that you could have. You could vote certain ways and not defend the president every turn. And who knows, right? Who knows what a test? He talks about how God tests people all the time. And I just wanted to ask if there was any chance of that. And ultimately, he said, you know, 2016 came down to two choices. One choice was somebody who was going to appoint pro-life judges and anti-abortion judges and generally rule from a conservative perspective. And he believes Hillary Clinton, I think his words were something along the lines of, was never going to stop an abortion if her life depended on it, or something along those lines. And so ultimately, he rationalizes everything else from abortion working backwards.
Do you think there is anyone in his life to whom he expresses doubt? I don't know about his relationship with his wife, other family members. You say publicly he never changes his mind. Do you know anything about those relationships?
I've met his family. I've talked to his brother and his sister, and I've asked all of them if they've witnessed him have doubt. And none of them could think of a time where they've seen Jeffers have any kind of doubt about almost anything in life. It's essential certitude.
So what's next for you? Are you still having lunch with him every couple of months?
Yeah, we actually talked after the story came out and agreed, yeah, we're still going to definitely have our lunches. I think he is continuing to pray for my soul. I'm going to continue just really enjoying his company and his kind of congenial charm.
Would you like to please him by becoming a Christian in his sense of the word?
Yeah, some part of me really would. I know that he would be delighted, and I do feel kind of bad it's not very often that the topic comes up, but I do feel a little bad when I explain that sometimes the world looks to me like it makes perfect sense in terms of being designed and a plan moving forward. And sometimes it really feels like utter chaos. And if somebody did design all of this, then they just let it go. You know, just a different view of the world. And it does worry me. I don't want to disappoint him. I like him. But he's also completely understanding. He's told me he gets along sometimes better with leaders of other religions, people he ostensibly believes are going to hell, than he gets along with other Southern Baptist leaders.
Michael J. Mooney writes for ESPN the magazine, Rolling Stone, and GQ, among other publications. His profile of Pastor Robert Jeffress in Texas Monthly is called Trump's Apostle. Michael, great to have you back. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at KERA Think. Again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.